Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 368. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We have a great guest with us today, but first let's bring on my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, are you surviving the snowmageddon down there in South Carolina?
Yeah, it's awful. It's we haven't had snow in 3 years, and we've had two in 2 weeks, so we a good dusting. It almost got to an inch already in like the last hour and a half, so the kids like it. I don't like the cold. It's like 20 degrees outside, and I'm miserable, so pray the power stays on. That's all I care about. Just keep the power on.
Especially with the young kids, you got to have that power. That goes out and it's all hell breaks loose. But
yep.
Let's bring on our guest now. You can find him over on The Athletic, Rates and Barrels, Stuff Plus on FanGraphs. He is the one, the only Eno Saris at Eno Saris on Twitter. Eno, are you signing with the Dodgers anytime soon or no?
They'd have to defer it all, I guess.
Yeah, defer it all to 2042, and they're paying like $400 million in deferred payments to Shohei and everybody else. But
I think the tax man always comes, you know, like, you know, I think what they're doing is a little bit like the Nationals. You know, they built in the rebuild time. So the Nationals right now are still paying, you know, Strasburg and Scherzer and all those guys.
Yep.
But it starts to fall off the books and right when they're ready to be good again. So maybe the Dodgers either are just like, we have a money machine, or, you know, there's going to be some point where we're bad and we'll just pay these guys and we'll get good again after that.
Yep. They'll still be raking in the money off of Shohei Ohtani, all the jersey sales and all the marketing that comes with Shohei. And yeah, that's they know what they're doing out there. See if someone can take them down this year. But we are starting our dynasty starting pitcher rankings discussion here. We already did our pitching prospects the last couple episodes. If you missed those, go back and check those out. That was episode 366 and 367. And now we're jumping into our top 25 dynasty starting pitcher rankings. We'll start off with our top 10s, discuss several guys, and then hit the rest of the top 25. So, Mr. Clegg, you want to kick us off with your top 10?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I've got Tarik Skubal at the top, followed by Paul Skeens, Garrett Crochet, Cole Reagans, Logan Gilbert. Then I got George Kirby, Roki Sasaki, Zach Wheeler, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, and Corbin Burns to round out the 10.
All right, I have Paul Skeens, Tarik Skubal, Spencer Strider, Garrett Crochet, Logan Gilbert, Corbin Burns, Roki Sasaki, Cole Reagans, Zach Wheeler, and Yuri Perez in the 10 slot. And I know these rankings are dynasty focused for you, Eno, but you just were on MLB Network the other day talking about your top 10. So you want to give those to the listeners?
Yeah, this wasn't dynasty, but I had Skeens, Skubal, Wheeler at the top. I could see pushing Wheeler down due to his age.
And then I had Corbin Burns, Chris Sale, Logan Gilbert, Garrett Crochet, Jake DeGrom, which he would not be in my top 10 for Dynasty. Dylan Cease and Framber Valdez to finish it up. Yeah, there's some interesting cases here. Sorry.
Excuse me.
That's all right.
Yeah, I got a bug in my throat. There I am. I'm back.
There, he's back.
But I think like somebody like Framber is a really interesting case for Dynasty because he throws hard. He hasn't really had injuries, you know, the big injuries yet. He's not too old yet. But he doesn't really give you the strikeout rate of the top guys. But he seems so solid. Like, he might actually sneak into my top 10 for Dynasty, despite some of his flaws, just because he's just, like, super high floor, I think.
Yeah, he kind of falls into that bucket with, like Logan Webb and, you know, Max Fried. Like, they're not the flashiest guys. They don't have, like, the 30% K rate, but they give you the volume, and that's definitely that's what you need right there. So yeah, he's definitely very underrated. And I think I even underrate him in my rankings as well. But we'll start out here. I mean, everyone knows that Skeens is phenomenal, Scooble is phenomenal, so we're not going to really dive into those guys. But the first name here, a guy that's been, you know, near the top of rankings for the last several years, kind of broke out back in the shortened 2020 year and has been very, very consistent and very, very good for the last few years since then. That's Corbin Burns, you know, formerly of the Brewers, the newest Arizona Diamondback. Burns is still just 30 years old, coming off a 2024 campaign when he made 32 starts, 194 and a third innings, third straight year above 190 innings, which is like very rare these days. Had a 2.92 ERA, 1.10 WHIP, 181 strikeouts to 48 walks. But you know, the K rate's been trending down. It was, you know, mid 30%. Range back in 2020 and 2021, then dipped to a still elite 30.5%. Then last 2 years down to 25.5% and 23.1%. But a little bit of optimism, went with a little bit of different cutter later in the year, added a sweeper. Well, you know, used it more, I should say, much more in September. So you saw the K rate tick back up a little bit. So Eno, with Corbin Burns here, you know, do you still, you know, feel that he can be, you know, elite, like a top five or even a top 10 pitcher for the next few years and kind of age, kind of like Zach Wheeler has?
Yeah, I think there's enough feel with Corbin Burns that, you know, I think he could, you know, bring the sinker back a little bit. I can think the four seam's not a good pitch, but he could surprise people with it. He could bring that sweeper in and out. I think he really dominated with his cutter for a long time. And now he's sort of entering the middle ages of his career. And I'm happy that he got his cutter back late last season. And that's part of why he would be in my top three for Dynasty, because he's got the best fastball of a lot of these guys. He's, you know, that cutter is going to be the bread and butter. But as he, you know, mixes in these other pitches here and there, I think he'll show a second version of Corbin Burns. I mean, we're just elected CeCe Sabathia into the Hall of Fame, and he was a power pitcher at first, and then he had a lot of longevity due to his excellent cutter. And so then the last bit that we kind of dance around, because it's so hard to predict injury, but you know, we've all got guys in our top tens that have had surgery before, and you know, there's decent recoveries from one surgery. And once you get to two surgeries, the failure rate sort of goes up to 20 and 30%. So, you know, some guys don't ever come back from their second Tommy John. And when you get to three, we're just, you know, getting into uncharted territory. So somebody like Spencer Strider, I know I'm hopping ahead and we'll talk about him, but, you know, guys, you know, Crochet or, you know, who else did you guys put in your top list that have had? I think Scooble. Did Scooble have? Yeah, Scooble had Tommy John. So,
yeah.
You know, I just sometimes I wonder about how high I should rank a guy who's had one Tommy John in Dynasty rankings, just because, you know, second one, failure rate goes up. Third one, you're in uncharted territory for the big part. So I don't necessarily want to be left holding the bag. So I know I put DeGrom in my top 10, but like I said, that wasn't a Dynasty ranking. For me, Corbin Burns, excellent health, excellent cutter, and I think he has the pitchability in the field to kind of enter another stage of his career.
Yeah, now that cutter, you know, a little bit slower, a little more movements in September, adding that sweeper in was really, I was really encouraged by it. So, yeah, hopefully, you know, maybe he's not back to like 35% K rate Burns, but I think you can see that K rate tick back up, you know, 27, 28%, something like that, which is still very good. And yeah, obviously he's been one of the higher floor guys out of anybody in this top 10. Chris, any thoughts on Mr. Burns here?
Yeah, I think we've noted the September changes for Burns, but you saw the stuff plus on the cutter jump from 120 to 147 in September. So down the stretch, it was just playing significantly better. Velocity dipped a little bit, but the depth and horizontal were back to 2021 levels, which I think is pretty substantial. Whiffs went up with it. Sweeper usage also went up, and I think that could have played a factor. And I think him using the sweeper more down the stretch was big. And yeah, I think that he's going to be fine. You know, I have him 10th, which is probably low. Like, you look at the rankings, feels kind of low. But again, he's in kind of like that second tier. It's kind of a big glob for me where, yeah, I think you could argue for any of those guys personally. So yeah, I'm still in on Corbin Burns. I think the fit's fine in Arizona, and I think he's going to be really good for the next several years.
We've kind of like just assumed that like Wheeler won't get injured, but he has a Tommy John on his ledger, and you know,
yeah,
used to be, you know, more of a problem there. Sometimes I'm tempted to look at the difference between sitting and Max Velo, and for Wheeler that's like a large gap, and apparently the closer you throw to your maximum Velo, the more stress you put on your arm. So I wonder if we should be kind of highlighting that a little bit. I think Scooble has a large gap between his max. You've seen that in games where he kind of throws 100 near the end of the game. Remember Verlander used to always kind of sit 93, 94, 95, and then kind of, oh, crap, it's the seventh inning, and he wants the last strikeout, and here's 99 on 100. So, you know, I think guys who do that age pretty well, Verlander has to be a good outcome in today's age for health. So,
yeah,
that could be something you can look at when you're trying to decide between two pitchers in Dynasty, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point. Has Logan Gilbert has not had Tommy John, has he?
No, and the Mariners generally throw really close to their max.
Yeah.
Rut-row.
Something to watch.
Rut-row, Raggy.
Yeah, you got somebody like, I want Bryce Miller to be amazing. And, you know, I was going to answer a question. Again, I'm jumping ahead on the thing, sorry, but. You know, Bryce Miller is totally a candidate to join this kind of top 25 tier you're talking about. He's right there, right outside of it. But he's a former reliever who throws 1.1 miles off of his max. Like, he sits. Yep. So he's just basically a reliever out there, you know, for 5-6 innings. And I don't know, that makes me nervous. Plus, he's like, he's not the biggest guy, you know? He's like, I don't know.
Well, that's a good point. And I was actually at one of those Verlander starts. You know, I think it was in the vicinity of 2012. He was still with the Tigers, and yeah, he went 8 shutout. But I remember it was his 122nd pitch of the game, and he threw 100 miles an hour on a dot to get the K. So it was like literally, I was at one of those games to a T, and what you just kind of described. And I love that. Like, Pedro used to be that way. You know, obviously loved watching Pedro. Like, you know, he would, you know, sit, you know, 94, 95, 96, but he can go up 98, 99 when he wanted to. So. That's a good point. You know, Wheeler knows that he can go out and, you know, get that 98, 99 when he needs it. So on Scooball as well. But yeah, that's definitely a very interesting point you brought up here, and kind of it leads us into another hard thrower that broke out in a massive way this past year, and that's Garrett Crochet. I remember, you know, there was the three guys beginning of last year, the, you know, exciting relievers trying to be turned into starters. It was Crochet, it was DL Hall, And A.J. Puck was the third one. And, you know, two of those didn't go well at all, but one went extremely well. I mean, Garrett Crochet was, you know, one of the best pitchers in baseball last year. You know, a couple blow-ups inflated the ERA. But overall, 358 ERA, 107 whip, 5.5% walk rate, 35.1% strikeout rate. I mean, he was right there. A lot of his underlying metrics were very close to the Paul Skeens. For most of the season there, once Skeens came up in mid-May. So Crochet being drafted high in redraft right now. You know, we both have him very high. I have him 4, and Chris has him 3. So, Eno, you know, how confident are you in a guy like Garrett Crochet kind of staying? You know, he's already kind of gotten to the elite level. Are you confident he can stay here and be one of the best arms in the game moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, the obvious question is just workload and how many injuries. I mean, one thing that I did like, you know, separate from that, is that late in the season, he was throwing a sinker. And I think that actually, you know, I think of him as, and I even went on MLB Now and was like, oh, he's like a two-pitch pitcher like Strider. But, you know, when I think about it, it's more nuanced than that. He can be four-seam, two-seam, slider, cutter. And, you know, he famously left the slider behind. It was more of a sweeper to use the cutter because he didn't want to throw this big sideways slider to righties, and they were kind of hitting it. But I think if he goes to a four-pitch mix, that's going to be important for him to mix that slider back in, even to righties, to use that sweeper against lefties, just to kind of not be so predictable. I think if he did go out there this year and just throw the fastball and the cutter again all season, I think he would see more blowups. So I'm looking for him, you know, any pitch in spring will make me feel better about it. I do have him in my top 10. I do think he's dominant, but, you know, in terms of dynasty, I think what you want to see, the missing link between guys who are dominant for a short time and the guys who are dominant for a long time, is this sort of, you know, feel, pitchability, largeness of arsenal, you know. And so I would, you know, if I was thinking about Crochet long term, I would want him to throw a curveball, or, you know, mix that slider back in, mix that sweeper back in. So in the short term, yeah, I'm all systems go. But, you know, year five of Crochet, I'm really interested to see what that looks like.
Yeah, and especially I already was interested, and then, you know, him coming to the Red Sox, my favorite team, added another element of interest for me, and hopefully he can lead the staff into the future here. But yeah, I love Garrett Crochet. I was able to get him, thankfully, a couple of leagues last year, both redraft and dynasty. Very fortunate. But yeah, his, you know, absolutely nasty outside of those few blowups. Obviously, he was really good. Only got six wins though, because obviously the White Sox were absolutely terrible last year. But yeah, like you mentioned, you know, primarily a two pitch guy, four seam and cutter. Combined for 82.2% of his pitches last year. Sweeper was a hair under 10%. Changeup 6%. Sinker only threw that about 2% of the time. But all five of those, even the ones that are seldom used, whiff rate over 30%. I mean, that's a hard thing to see these days. Five pitches with a 30% whiff rate or more. Yeah, that sweeper. Sweeper 42% whiff rate on the sweeper. Would love to see that used a bit more. Though he did give up a few home runs on that. Hung it a few too many times, but. I love Garrett Crochet, obviously. Chris, what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, so the arm talent's undeniable, I'd say. You look at what he did down the stretch. Obviously, we mentioned more sweeper usage, more sinker usage, less four-seam, a little less cutter usage down the stretch. And now in Boston's pitch dev, I think that they haven't gotten all the credit yet, but I think Boston's doing a lot of really good things with their pitchers in terms of being able to add or tweak arsenals. And I think, and I believe that they're going to do exactly that with Garrett Crochet. And maybe I'm forecasting too much here by saying this and believing that's going to be the case. But yeah, I firmly believe that we're going to see Crochet come out with a little bit of a tweaked arsenal. And I think it's going to work wonders. So I think it's a good fit for him from a developmental standpoint, pitching-wise, and also just a better team fit, obviously, from the White Sox. So yeah, I'm obviously like Crochet a lot. Thought what he showed last year is legit for the most part, and obviously he's got to stay healthy. That's the big thing. We've got to see him be able to hold up over a full season workload for beyond just what he did last year. You know, he made 32 starts last year, was 146 innings. Obviously, we'd like to see more innings than that over a 32 start basis.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Chris Sale comps are easy, right? And hopefully he stays healthy a little bit more than Chris Sale did in his Boston tenure. But who knows, maybe he goes to your Atlanta Braves and wins a Cy Young down the road there, Chris, after we trade him to you guys for whatever, you know, second baseman you have in 2029.
Nacho Alvarez for Garrett Crochet.
Nacho Alvarez. That's it. Nacho Alvarez for Garrett Crochet in like 4 or 5 years. No, hopefully not. But speaking of these, we're kind of on that trend with these kind of risky guys here. Spencer Strider, he's one that I have a really hard time ranking now. Or just redraft dynasty anywhere. I mean, I still have him as my SP3 because obviously he was the number one guy, you know, a year or two ago before he got hurt again. He's a guy that had Tommy John back in, I want to say it was 2019, and then the internal brace procedure last year. I still have him, again, top five right now. Chris has him just outside of his top 10. Very tough guy to rank. You know, where are you at on Strider? Obviously, all the talent in the world, still only 26, but, I mean, he's a big risk coming off the second injury now.
Yeah, and that's the you know, second Tommy John is, you know, where you're going to get a, you're going to be pushed down in my rankings for Dynasty. I just, you know, I can't be the one with him on my team when he goes down for a third one, you know. And we've got, you know, like, if you look at three Tommy Johns, maybe we're getting better at them. But, you know, Johnny Venters was a third Tommy John guy. Brandon Beachy was a third Tommy John guy. I'm not picking on the Braves, I promise. Jose Rio, I think was Rio's career was ended with his third Tommy John. I don't think he came back from it. We're seeing some guys now that are kind of trying to come back from it, and maybe with the internal brace and, you know, advances in the surgery, that it's better for them. But, you know, this doctor that I know just used Stuff Plus to kind of look at pitchers that are coming back. He just got a peer-reviewed study they just did. And one of the things that we don't realize is, you know, we can say things like, oh, well, command doesn't come back in the first year, but it comes back eventually, and stuff comes back pretty quickly. What he found was production never comes back. You know, the production basically comes back for 30% of the people who've ever had Tommy John once. And I think what he's talking about, and I try to figure this out, because I'm like, if the stuff comes back and the command comes back eventually, what's going on? He was using wins above replacement to kind of judge if a guy was back. And wins above replacement is like a quantity stat. So I think what he found is that there's some, through his analysis, that there's some evidence that people don't come back to the same quantities after Tommy John. And that makes sense. I mean, maybe the team is just like, oh, we're going to be more careful with him. He's out of surgery, you know? Maybe it's just the league in general is not using their players as hard. But if you're never, let's say we never get a 185 inning season from Spencer Strider ever.
Yeah.
Like that would be possible, you know? And he could be good enough in between. I mean, he's DeGrom-esque in terms of his quality on the field. But, and maybe just all of baseball is going to go away from 180. Maybe not even, you know, Burns will get 180. But while you still can get 180 from somebody, you kind of want it. So I think because of that, Strider cannot be in my top five. Now, back of the top 10, you know, Roki Sasaki's been hurt. You know, Crochet's been hurt. There are going to be some guys that sneak in there that have been hurt before. But in my top five, I want a guy who's never been hurt before.
Yeah. No, that's definitely fair. And like, I had a hard time, you know, figuring out where I want to rank him, kind of weighing, like, you know, how good he's been. You know, we look at 2023, he had almost 300 strikeouts, which is, like, you know, incredibly rare to even see anymore, given this not enough volume in the game, as you mentioned. He had 20 wins, 32 starts. Like, he was so good. And then I just don't know what to do with him now. And it's, you know, we don't have as much. This internal brace is kind of like a newer thing in terms of the elbow surgery. So kind of waiting to see, like, how, you know, that kind of shakes out when we get more of a sample size with those types of injuries. But yeah, I think he's one of, like, the biggest. I mean, I also have DeGrom, the biggest, like, boom or bust pitchers right now in the game. Like, could go out there and win a Cy Young again, or he could just be, you know, in the world of hurt and missing a lot of time like DeGrom does. So hopefully it's the former, not the latter, not the former. Or no, wait a minute. No, I got there the first time. The former, not the latter.
I did like he started throwing that curveball and stuff. Like I've been saying, like, I like when these guys add pitches, because I don't think he could have been fastball slider and be that dominant for his whole career. So, you know, if you want to blame the curveball for, you know, him, his ligament going, go ahead. But he had to do something like that.
Yeah, you kind of got to wonder. It's like we talked about Strider, you know, a lot on this podcast over the last couple of years. About, you know, at the time, we're like, all right, let's hope we use the changeup more, because now, changeup had some good traits. He just never used it a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And then he, you know, kind of adds in that curveball, goes a different route. But we only see him for, what, he had two starts, and then he was gone last year. So he only threw it 22 times. So not a lot of data to go off of there.
I can't blame a pitch he's thrown 22 times. Yeah, you know,
right. Just can't do it. But hey, it's
probably all those really high velo fastballs.
Yeah, exactly. Or all the sliders. But who knows? Yeah. But yeah, you know, Spencer Strider, I mean, who knows what you get out of him moving forward. But especially in this next guy, kind of an unknown as well. I mean, not an unknown, but unknown in terms of being in the major leagues, and that's Roki Sasaki coming over from Japan after a phenomenal few years there. Obviously, he signed with the Dodgers, as everyone knows by this point. Coming off a 2024 over there, 111 innings, 2.35 ERA, 129 strikeouts, 32 walks. I mean, still a really good year, you know, slightly down from what he had done the previous couple of years. You know, velo was down a little bit. There was some rumor of some arm fatigue going on with him. But, you know, very talented arm. I mean, we saw him shine on the biggest stage. And so where do you kind of value a guy like Roki Sasaki now, Eno? I mean, I see people rank him top five already. You know, I have him back in the top 10. Where do you have him so far?
Yeah, he might be one where his dynasty ranking is higher than his redraft ranking for me. There might be a different Dodgers team. There might be a different Sasaki, you know, in the future. Right now, I think that they're, I mean, they've been doing this anyway, but I think they're a six-man rotation team. And when I like kind of looked through and did the math, I was like, that means that those guys are going to top out at 130, 135 innings. So, you know, he does have the talent, and a lot of those Dodgers guys have the talent to throw, you know, 180 strikeouts in 135 innings and maybe still be worth it. But I looked at Tyler Glasnow's season last year, and he did exactly what people kind of project for Sasaki. He struck out 30% of the batters he saw. He was excellent. He had a 3.49 ERA. He did it 130-something innings. And he was the 23rd best pitcher in fantasy baseball, according to the auction calculator last year. So I kind of tend to think that all of the Dodgers pitchers are capped a little bit. But long term, you know, maybe the Dodgers, you know, change that up. Maybe they have a couple guys that they push to 150 innings. And then maybe, yeah, you know, one part of my issue is that, like, he was a, you know, a guy that was striking out 33-34% of the guys he saw in Japan, you know, 2 years ago and the year before that. Last year, he kind of dipped, and that was the velo dip 2 miles an hour. The slider, it's never been that good, dipped to 83 miles an hour. So that's a lot different than 89 miles an hour when he was in the WBC. So his fastball went from 99-ish to under 97. And so, you know, yes, 97 is still good, but he never really threw a great breaking ball. So my comp for him is Kevin Gausman. But it's Kevin Gausman, a young Kevin Gausman, with, you know, on the Dodgers. So maybe he can develop a good breaking ball and be better than that. So, you know, I think there's a volume question as well as a little bit of a stuff question. But 97 with a devastating splitter, like, he's probably going to be good. I can't put him in my top 10 for this year if I'm giving him 130 innings. And even in Dynasty, some of that is sort of faith casting and hoping that the Dodgers maybe change what they do, or he just becomes such a stud pitcher that they have to put him in there for 160, 170 innings.
Yeah, no, that's definitely fair. And I struggle in where to rank him too, because, I mean, I really do with all these guys. Obviously, the talent's there, but transitioning to a new league, to a new country, so there's a lot of other variables that go into, you know, a guy like Roki Sasaki coming over. But again, he's much younger than most of the, you know, people, the guys that come over from Japan. You know, only 23 years old. He'll be 23 for the entire 2025 season. So, yeah, definitely a really fun player here. We'll see how his rookie year shakes out. Chris, what are your thoughts here on Roki? Is he be somebody you'd be maybe looking to target right now in Dynasty?
I mean, I think that everybody's taking him one in a first-year player draft if he's available. Right. I mean, he's going to pitch immediately. You don't have to wait like you do other draftees. So,
yeah, and the other tough. The hitters, right, aren't – there's no hitter. There's, like, the hitters that are there. But do you think – who first-year player draft, we're talking about, like, Bizana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Weatherhold,
there's no Wyatt Langford in this one. Like, it's
right.
Good.
That's what I'm saying. Right,
they're good, but they're like, yeah, step down from like Langford. Yeah,
yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, it's if you're going to target him, you have to most likely pay up significantly or luck into the first pick in a first year player draft. So I think it makes it tough to acquire him. I think if you want to acquire him in a dynasty, your best bet's probably to wait a little bit, and you know, he may not pitch a lot out of the gate. They could have him throw in 3 to 4 innings, depending on his status. You know, I mean, we don't know. And so we do know that they're going to limit him. I can tell you that much.
Yeah.
Like Eno said, all the Dodgers are going to be limited. I think they're going to limit Roki even more, just given the nature of they want to keep him for the long run, keep him healthy for the postseason, all those sorts of things. So it may be a buying opportunity midseason for him in Dynasty. I'll be curious to see what the pitch data looks like, where the velocity is, because from 2023 to 2024, we did see a pretty substantial difference. And, you know, I'm curious what that looks like and what does it look like now, you know, in 2025 to get back to those 2023 levels, or is it more of what we saw in 2024? And that could be pretty factoring into his rank too. Like if it's more 2024 versus what we saw in 2023, then all of a sudden we're, I think, dropping him a couple of tiers, in my opinion. Still a great arm, but we went from like super elite pitch data in 2023 to, I mean, still really good in 2024, but not the level that it was.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, even his K minus BB went from the best. If you do a 3-year K minus BB, it went from the best, you know, who's ever come over from Japan. Yeah. You know, like it's over 30. You never have a guy who's a K minus BB over 30. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And then last year, if you just did that last year, he's more like a Tanaka. Yeah. You know, he falls to like fifth or sixth. So it's a pretty big difference. I mean, yeah. You know,
it's notable.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. Of the three, though, we've set this up, though. Garrett Crochet, Spencer Strider, Roki Sasaki. I think they should be near each other. We're talking about small volume, you know, elite arms. And I think I might, you know, kind of have them slightly different for redraft versus long term. Like, I think I'd have Garrett Crochet first for a redraft because, like, Boston is just going to want. They don't have him forever, and they want to win now. And like, you know, I think they'll just pitch him. I think they'll pitch him for like 160 innings or something at least. Yeah. And you know, and I think they'll pitch him and he'll get wins. And then Strider is like, you know, the Braves don't have an elite pitching depth, I don't think. So I think, you know, whatever they want it so that they have him in October. So they will play some games with him. They'll take time off. Mm-hmm. Maybe he doesn't even start with the big league team right away. Like they might push that and try to debut him in late April, so they have him in October, that kind of stuff. And then Roki, he's on a team where he might be the fifth starting pitcher, and Dustin May and Tony Gonsolin, and that doesn't even bring up like
Bobby Miller,
all the other guys, Knack, Miller. They're like the Rays. They're just gonna, you know, everyone pitches like 110 innings and.
Right.
You know, hopefully somebody's healthy in the postseason.
It's funny, like the Dodgers, like 6-10 is probably, you take that five and they'd be like a, I think, mid-pack, like rotation in baseball right now. I'm still very high on Bobby Miller. I mean, obviously last year went sideways in 10 different ways for him, but I still have faith in Bobby Miller, and obviously there's so much talent in that system. See how it all shakes out. But yeah, I was going to say, like, Sasaki, once like Ohtani's back pitching at some point this season, it's like, yeah, it's going to be their five. Sasaki will be their five. It's just absolutely crazy. And they might, I wouldn't even be surprised they went out and signed Jack Flaherty at this point. I mean, like, just kidding, everybody. I mean, they've already gotten, Tanner Scott and Kirby Yates, everything. They're signing everybody. But, yeah, that's the Dodgers for you. They're the new evil empire of baseball. All right, we're going to jump out of our top 10 and into the rest of our top 25 right now. So 11 through 25 rankings here. Chris, who do you got?
All right. So it's 11. I've got Blake Snell, followed by Dylan Cease, Spencer Strider, Yuri Perez, Michael King, and 16 through 20, Bryce Miller, Garrett Cole, Tyler Glasnow, Hunter Green, and Pablo Lopez. And then 21 through 25, Chris Sale, Freddie Peralta, Shane McClanahan, Zach Gallen, and Jared Jones.
All right, so 11 through 25 for me. I got Yoshinobu Yamamoto at 11, Garrett Cole 12, McClanahan 13, Hunter Green 14, George Kirby 15, which is probably a little low. Dylan Cease, Blake Snell, Grayson Rodriguez, Bryce Miller, and Michael King are 16 through 20. 21 through 25, Pablo Lopez, Luis Castillo, Aaron Nola, Tyler Glasnow, and Chris Sale. So some of the old guard there sneaking into the back end of my top 25. And we'll start with guy I have 24th and Chris has 18th, and that's Tyler Glasnow. Going back to the Dodgers here, what a surprise. You know, Glasnow, obviously, when he's on, one of the best pitchers in the game. You know, Anito brought up last year how he was still like a top 25 arm, you know, even though he only made 22 starts. But that's like my issue, and why I kind of dropped him down a good chunk in my kind of most recent updates is, you know, last year was a career high, 134 innings, and only his third year ever with over 100. Granted, two of those three have come in the last 2 years, when he had 120 and 134. But at this point, just given the price tag that it, you know, takes to get him, you know, though the ADP has come down this year a decent bit, so that definitely helps. But he's still being, you know, ranked and valued as an elite arm, and on a per start per inning basis, he absolutely is. But you know, I don't know if this is a guy I want to really anchor my, you know, dynasty rotation around. If I had him as my two or three, you know, phenomenal. I would love that. Especially if I paired him up with a guy like, you know, Burns or a Wheeler guy that I know I'll get the volume out of. But, you know, it's almost the question of, you know, Eno at this point, is Glasnow worth the elite price tag that it takes to either draft him or trade for him in dynasty?
I don't know, man. You know, I think that the trend is that we're getting less and less, even out of the elite guys. I was looking, I think we've got three 200 inning guys each of the last three seasons. And I could, maybe I'll make a bold prediction this year where we don't get one. Because I just feel like that's like one injury from a stud away from not having a 200, you know what I mean? Like,
yep.
It's really, and some of them are like 201. What if those guys get 199? I just, you know, we're just seeing fewer and fewer. Like, another way you can see it is if you go to Fangraphs and you do like qualified pitchers, you know, a lot of times you'll be like I'll get into an argument. Somebody will be like, oh, well, you know, his 18% strikeout rate is like, you know, top 65 in the big leagues. And I'm like, yeah, because you have the qualified filter on and there's only 67 qualified pitchers. So it's actually really bad, you know. And so like we're the qualified pitchers that are qualified for the ERA title is fewer and fewer every year. There's a movement to like change that, you know,
absolutely.
You change the minimum number of innings because we're just not getting those. I'm a Hall of Fame voter, and you know, we voted CC Sabathia in today, but you know, he's going to be one of the last guys who has volume. Maybe Verlander has some volume for him and Scherzer, but like for the most part, we're going to be voting in more people that are like Felix Hernandez, I think, who don't have that volume. And so in the face of reduced volume, do you fetishize volume and be like, I need to have volume? And I've been leaning towards that a little bit. Like, I want health grade A's in my top five. I want guys who I think can throw 180 innings. I want those guys as my number one guys. But if you look at my rankings, there's this place from 15 to 20, 15 to 25, just filled with Tyler Glasnows. I mean, literally, it's Blake Snell, Tyler Glasnow, like in my rankings for this year. I have Tyler Glasnow, Blake Snell, Max Fried, who I have for 165, Yamamoto 139, Roki 129, Strider 126 innings, Otani 120 innings. So there's like just this place in my heart for a guy to just dominate in fewer innings, but it just can't be my ace. So I guess that's the way I'm threading the needle, is I will allow these guys into my top 20. And if they can be my number two starter, then I feel okay with it. But I can't make one of these guys my number one. And that's going to affect their dynasty ranking. That's going to affect their redraft ranking. I'm always going to have a little asterisk next to them being like, can't handle the full load. Can't be my number one. Could be a great number two. We'll have seasons, of course. Well, Snell has seasons where he throws 180, you know, but I can't predict that. I can't bet on that. I can't pay for that. I can't pay the auction price. I can't pay the draft price and just, you know, put them down for 180. So for now, I'm going to dock people if I don't think that they have that, because the innings is how you win leagues.
Yep.
You know, and so you can't, I know that you can get 180 strikeouts from them, but, you know, if they have an ERA of like a 2.5 and they do it in 110 innings, that doesn't move your team ERA the same as if they had a 2.5 and 180 innings.
Yep.
It's just, you know, there's a lot of math involved here. And so I'll take them, you know, 15 through 17, but I can't float him higher than that.
Yeah. No, that's kind of, I think where both Chris and I have him too, in the 20 range, give or take. And yeah, I just pulled it up on Fangraphs. So this year, three over 200 in it, or last year, I should say. Three over 200 and 58 qualified starters.
I went back 58. Oh my God, I overshot.
I went back 10 years, 2014. We had 88 qualified arms and 34 that hit 200 innings. There were a bunch.
34.
That's insane.
I mean, these are some of the names hitting 200 that year. Like Brendan McCarthy. You got Jeremy Guthrie, Aaron Ferrang, Chris Tillman. You know, Phil Hughes, Mike Leake, Strasburg even was over 200 that year. You know, Julio Teheran is some of the names as a throwback here.
Not the paragons of health there, but they did it that year.
Nope. Only how many of these guys are still even active? Scherzer's still active.
Verlander on that list.
Verlander's got 206 that year.
Yeah.
Lance Lynn was on that list. He got 203. So I think it's just those three. Mark Burley. Good old Mark Burley. Yep, so just those three. No, Jose Quintana, four. There we go. He had 200.
There you go, nice.
Four of those guys still active. Yeah, it's just how much has dropped down. I think you could probably go back 10 years before that. It'd be even, you know, 50-some guys getting 200 innings. Different game,
I mean, you could
sure.
get away with 160 if the 180 is a cap, but
yeah.
We're talking about projecting them for 125 to 130, you know.
Right. Yeah, it's almost like 180 is the new two. You know, 150
yeah, exactly.
is the 175 is kind of all scaled back. But yeah, we're still, I just can't get behind Glass. I don't have Glass on any team. I mean, obviously, he's so fun to watch. You know, I love the breaking balls. They're so fun. But yeah, I just can't have him on any teams. I think he still gets valued a little bit higher.
In like Otter New, it's okay. Like there's some dynasty formats where you can have like a long bench, you know, and you're like, I just want those 120 awesome innings from Glass now. And then I've got, you know, like, 8 starting pitchers on my bench, and I'll rotate those guys through good starts. And you know, there's definitely formats where he makes more sense than others.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris, where are you at on Glass now?
I think if you know what you're getting out of him, I mean, obviously you can't be confident that you're going to get innings because we haven't seen. I mean, set career high this past year in his age 30 season. I'm not counting on a significant jump either. If he does jump, what does he give you? 145? I mean, I don't think the Dodgers are going to let him go much more. So, you know, on a per inning basis, yeah, it's really good. I think we know that Glasnow's got, you know, top of the scale stuff, but it doesn't matter. As Eno said, like, I'll take a guy that can give me a low 3s ERA over closer to 200 innings versus somebody like this who, even if it is a sub 3 ERA, and, you know, that hasn't
it
been
hasn't
the case.
Been too.
Yeah. 2021 is the last time we've seen that, and it was 88 innings. So, you know, even still, like, you take his 2021 season, a 266 over 88, it doesn't move the needle for your team. It doesn't do all that much. So I think if he's paired with the right arms, then he's valuable. I just picked him up in a dynasty auction draft for $12.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
hey, that's exactly what I'm talking about. When there's times where you're like, hey, you guys are overreacting. I'll take this guy for $12.
Yeah. Yeah, I got bid up too high on Cease, and I got capped, and I was like, okay, I'm going to pivot to a cheaper Glasnow who I feel like is, you know, I don't need him to be an elite innings eater. He can fill in here as a 3 or maybe even a 4, and I'll be very happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that same auction, I got McClanahan for 9, so feel okay about that. I still like McClanahan, but he's, you know, he's a 2 Tommy John guy, so we'll see.
As long as you get the discount, just got to get the discount. Don't pay full price.
Yep. Definitely got the discount there. Real quick, kind of off-topic, slightly off-topic question. You know, who do you think leads the Dodgers in innings this year?
Yeah, so in my projections, it's Blake Snell.
Do you feel confident about that?
No, I do not. But yeah, when I kind of like thought it through, I was like, I think it's Snell. I mean, he's like the only guy who's thrown 180 recently, right?
That's true, yeah. What do you have Snell projected for?
139.
Okay, so that's still even. That's just
so old
pretty
so it's faint praise.
They're probably gonna be a lot of guys for them like that. Yeah, 1 to 140 range. I think there'll be a lot of guys in that range. But we'll keep it right in the National League West, though. Go down to the Padres with Michael King, who made the transition from the bullpen to the rotation last year. Well, started kind of that transition late in 2023. Made 9 starts on the stretch, but then fully transitioned in 2024. A lot of, you know, split camp with him last spring. You know, can he be a full season starter? And he definitely did well. 2.95 ERA and 173 2/3 innings. 1.19 WHIP, 201 strikeouts. He had a 27.7% strikeout rate, 8.7% walk rate, and then finished as, I believe it was a top 25 starter last year, and that's kind of how he's getting ranked. I mean, I see, I think his ADP is, you know, kind of in like that late teens or so, I mean, for among pitchers, I should say. So he's kind of one that I wouldn't like him as my ace, and I don't think he's, you know, risen that high. But I think King is a pretty good number two. I mean, I was more of a, positive for King last year just because, you know, he had that deeper arsenal than you'd see from most, you know, relievers. You know, he had the four-pitch mix, you know, sinker, sweeper, four-seam, changeup. You kind of altered it a little bit, obviously going to the rotation. But he even added a slider last year as well, though he only used it 5.5% of the time. But, you know, deep mix, got to always kind of, you know, kept the walk rate in check. Commanded his pitch as well. I don't know if there's another level here with Michael King, but Eno, do you think are you buying into what you saw from Michael King last year, and you think this is sustainable going forward?
Well, I had him real high last year in rankings, and I counted him as a win for myself when I kind of tallied them up. And there's this weird phenomenon sometimes where like I might be the low man on Seth Lugo this year, even though I was the high man on him last year, and I think I might be one of the lower people on Michael King this year. And part of it is, you know, you can look at his stuff, and now that it's normalized for being a starter, he basically is a guy who has an elite sweeper and then like two pretty good fastballs. But now he's down to 93.8, which is actually below average velocity for the league, but just about average for a fastball for a starter. So he's got average fastball velocity, two average fastballs, got an elite sweeper, and a decent changeup. I mean, he's a little bit closer to a wide arsenal and command guy than he is to the kind of dominant stuff guy that we saw out of the pen. And so, you know, another thing that is interesting for me is that he outperforms his swinging strike rate. So right now, he has a 12% swinging strike rate. And if you look at other people around him last year that had a 12% swinging strike rate, Michael King is surrounded by Andrew Haney, Cutter Crawford, Luis Castillo, Sean Manaea, Gavin Stone, Fromber. You know, Fromber had 11.4. Mackenzie Gore had a 12.5. So, you know, he's not in a group. There's nobody else here that has the same strikeout rate as him, really. And so I wonder if he's overperforming his stuff a little bit. And then you have to think that, you know, the reason that he went from starting to relieving was some pretty bad health issues. And he had like a really bad fracture in his elbow, kind of the thing that was really nasty. And he was like screaming in pain as he came off the field. So, you know, he's got some health issues that we're not baking into projections, I think. People kind of see, oh, it went really well from last year. And I think it's just going to keep going. So I'm not saying that I hate him, but I've got him right now. I've got him behind. I've got him right next to Bryce Miller, and they're at 26 and 27.
Okay.
So it's not a terrible place, but I think if I, you know, project innings, I give him sort of like 155. I might give Bryce Miller more innings, even with the possible issues with throwing close to his max. I mean, he hasn't shown those issues yet, and he's still young. So it might be one of those long-term issues that doesn't matter yet. But I've got a King, Bryce Miller, Justin Steele as like this interesting kind of you could wait on your second starter and make one of those guys. But I think that'll price me out. I think people will buy Michael King before I get to him.
Yeah, so you kind of have him in like, you know, back end SP2, high end SP3 territory. I think he's kind of more like early to mid SP2 range in terms of like the perceived value and price point at this point. But I mean, he's one where, well, I like Michael King a lot. I always kind of have, even when he was at the Yankees. And, you know, I would love him as my three. I mean, I think, you know, I'd be okay with him as my two, but if I'm building a dynasty team.
ERA starts with two over the last 3 years. I mean, it looks real nice, but.
Yeah, he's solid. He doesn't have that pizzazz. I don't think he's ever going to be an ace, but if I can, you know, get, you know, a couple of good guys and have him as my three, I would feel really, really good. Even like Justice Steele, I like him. I think he's underrated. I think, you know, Zach Gallen could be a nice bounce back and kind of in that same similar range. So maybe one of those guys is my three. I'd be feeling pretty good about it. Chris, what are your thoughts here on Michael King?
Yeah, I mean, like, I certainly like what he brings to the table. Am I a little concerned there's some regression coming? Yeah, I mean, I think that naturally you're going to see some ERA regression at some point. It's kind of hard to continue to live in that, you know, right around three, below three range with, especially, as Eno mentioned, the stuff now normalizes a starter. Fastball stuff plus numbers aren't great. And I don't know if he's going to strike out near 28% of batters again. So, you know, I was looking, oopsie, as him sub 25% just slightly. And, you know, if he does that and he gives you a mid three ERA, I think there's still value. But again, it's probably a case where you should probably look to sell high in a dynasty league. He will turn 30 pretty soon. And not that that age is an issue, but also like his relative ADP is pretty high. And normally some dynasty players can go by that as well. And it allows you to potentially cash out. And that may be the best move here if you can think you can get more than the value returns. Because again, like, I thought it was interesting that Eno mentioned like Justin Steele and like how much, like, what kind of different production are we going to get? Like, maybe King gives you more strikeouts, but, you know, I wouldn't be shocked to see those two wind up pretty similar. So that was a good comparison that made me think, at least. And you could certainly trade King and get a lot more. You could get Steele plus for Michael King in a dynasty.
Yeah. Yeah, you probably could. And yeah, shout out to Jordan Rosenblum with the oopsie, which I love that name. That's a great name. It's almost like, you know.
Yeah, that's, you know, if people are struggling to know how to exactly fold stuff plus into their analysis, because it is interesting that I think it's most useful to kind of pair with like scouting knowledge on a debut. If a guy just hops up and you don't have much information on them, then stuff plus is really useful. But then once they start giving you results on the field, what you really want to do is fold stuff plus into a projection system. So if you're looking for that, oopsie is the only projection system on Fangraphs that has folded stuff plus into its thing. So you'll see, you know, oopsie will be the most divergent projection system when you're looking at pitchers. Like, you'll be like, whoa, like, look at Jesus Tinoco's, you know, oopsie projection. It's like, I think almost three quarters of a run below his other ones. So, like, there's, you know, the higher stuff guys, it'll show up in their projection. And that also gives you a good sense as, like, a fantasy owner. You can see it and be like, yeah. Oh, okay, all right. You know, that's how it's going to, you know, show itself. And so, you know, and I think we can only fine-tune that. And because now the new stuff plus is going to spit out, like, expected home run, expected ground ball, expected pop-up, because what we found in our research was that the shape of the pitches does actually influence those outcomes. And so as you can do that, he hasn't done that this year, but I think next year he'll be able to, or we might do a daily projection system where we're using these projected pop-up rates and projected ground ball rates due to their stuff plus, and then using a projection system that regresses it and looks at other results on the field and kind of folds it all together. So oopsie's nice to have up there as a line.
Yeah, I love this stuff. I feel like we're still just scratching the surface with all of this. Like, I remember, I think it was, 2 years ago, I loved, I think it was in Florida, you and Nick Pollock, you're kind of doing the stuff plus, you know, versus the PLV and how it, you know, differed and stuff like that. Like, I love this stuff. And I feel like we're just really still scratching the surface with all the data we have and how we kind of, you know, interpret it and value it. So that's why I love baseball.
Yeah, I mean, just, it was like 2 or 3 years ago that the bat, by Derek Carty was like the first projection system to really fold in like barrel rates and exit velocities and stuff. So yeah, Hawkeye has brought just a explosion of data that we can start to use better.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, next guy here, one of the old guard, Gerrit Cole, 34 years old now. You know, still had a good 2024, though he was limited. The 17 starts, 95 inning, had a little bit of elbow inflammation that limited him. 3.41 ERA, 1.13 WHIP, got an 18% strikeout minus walk rate. So still a good year, but obviously not as good as we had come to expect from Gerrit Cole. He's one where, you know, he's got that little downward trend starting to happen here. You know, velocity's ticked down, you know, close to a mile per hour each of the last 2 years. I mean, he was 97.8 on the four seamer in 2022. Then 96.7 and 95.9 last year. I mean, he's up to 34 years old now. He was one that I thought would just age gracefully, like Zach Wheeler has, like Aaron Nola has. I know Nola's a year or two younger than Cole, but, you know, do you see this downward trend continuing Eno, or do you think there's hope for Gerrit Cole? You know, maybe I don't think he's a bounce back to what he was. I don't think that's fair to say, but you know, maybe kind of stopping the downward trend and still having a pretty good, you know, next few years.
I do. I mean, my evidence for that is that, you know, with the Stuff Plus revamp, he still has the cutter, slider, four seam, and knuckle curve as all above average pitches by Stuff Plus. So that's pretty remarkable for a person his age and for someone that we think is just coming off a stuff drop off, you know?
Yep.
And the other thing that kind of steps forward for me about Gerrit Cole is that last year, I think he like kind of lost his slider a little bit. Like, and I don't think it was necessarily movement. It was about command. So, I mean, his slider went from, you know, for his career, it's been 88.3 and last year was 88.2. So it wasn't, you know, that much slower. And in terms of movement, there's not that much difference in movement, but he still somehow went from throwing it nearly a quarter of the time to 15% of the time last year. And he went from throwing a cutter, you know, he's always told me that he's like slightly nervous about throwing the cutter too much because he doesn't want it to affect his fastball shape. And so he's been, you know, mixing in some cutters against lefties instead of four seams. He's been 6% in 2022, 7% in 2023, 16% with the cutter last year. And I think that's a direct reason why the swing and strike rate and the strikeout rate dropped. I think that there's room to like for a healthy arm to come into this next season and start throwing the slider again more and get back some of those whiffs. So I don't know. Either that or he enters his CC stage and he's just like, I'm a big mix guy with command and a cutter as opposed to this dominant sort of fastball slidery guy that I used to be. So either way, I actually really like him. And I don't know what innings total would give him because what he had last year could be a precursor to injury. Maybe he'll miss all this year. But I do think my over-under on innings is higher than most of those guys we've just been talking about. I had him higher than the Dodgers crew. And the Strider and so on. Like, he hasn't had the surgery yet, you know? Like, he had a down year, he was injured, but it wasn't surgery. I don't know. I could feel him sort of bouncing back. There's some signs there that it wasn't as bad as we thought and that some of it was just trying to make it work when he wasn't feeling 100%.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have to revisit my ranking of him. I think 13 is a little bit high, but I wouldn't want him as
that's
my
sort eight. Of where I have him. I mean, that's redraft. I mean, maybe it's high for Dynasty because he is older now, but
yeah, like at this point, I think I would love to have like, you know, maybe 10 guys as my ace, and then a lot of these other guys fall in like SP2 range for me. So maybe I wouldn't mind Gerrit Cole as my SP2 for the next couple of years. I mean, you know, maybe 3-4 years out, you're kind of pushing it, but next, you know, 2 years or so, I think he can still provide.
It could be a good time to buy him because you know people don't like, you know, mid-30s starting pitchers.
Oh yeah,
I don't think it would cost you like a real top end prospect or. No. You know, I don't think it would cost like a young hitter in his prime in the big leagues. Like, you know, you're not, you know, you can get Cole for less than that. So
absolutely. You can get Zach Wheeler for a fair price. You can, you know, Chris Sale's price gone up after last year, but you could have gotten Chris Sale for a really good price entering last year.
And that's sort of buying Cole right now, right? It's like buying a little bit like buying Sale before his year in Atlanta. So,
yeah,
you know, I've convinced myself in my keeper leagues, I'm going to put some feelers out for Cole and see what it would cost.
Not a bad idea at all. Clegg, are you kind of a similar line of thinking here?
Yeah, I think for any contending team, like, this is the opportunity that you want. Like, if you're in contention, you always need arms, and this is the buying opportunity that you're looking for. Because look at the changes that he made going into 2023. 2022 was his worst season that he had had in his career from a home run standpoint. Like, he allowed a ton of home runs, and that was his issue. The numbers were still good, but there was a home run issue. So he makes some tweaks in the arsenal. And while we did see the K rate dip a bit, we also saw the home run rate drop pretty drastically, which, you know, we'll take that trade off, I think, to have a little bit less strikeouts if he's going to keep the ball in the yard more. And so I do think he bounces back this year. I'm counting on innings. He's thrown innings his entire career. He mentioned no surgery. If he hadn't had it yet, I'm hopeful that everything's good, and I think we can count on him for 150 to 170. I don't think that's crazy to say, given his track record. I mean, maybe that's even on the low end. Like, you know, I wouldn't be shocked to see even more than that, honestly. And if it's a good year and he's fully healthy, he's going to push near 200. And you're going to be very happy with the value, I think. Even if the strikeout rate stays in the 26-27% range, I think it'll be all right. And I think Cole's going to return really good value. And as Eno mentioned, I don't think it's going to cost a ton to acquire him in a trade. I think this is the perfect buying opportunity for a pitcher in a dynasty keeper league. Turn 34, you get guys of this age, people start to question. Like, and then especially coming off a down year too, you factor in age, down year, and injuries. It's like, oh yeah, like he's done. And I don't believe that a bit. So I think it's a great buying opportunity for Gerrit Cole, and I'm 100% trying to get him where I can.
Yeah, no, he's definitely not done. I mean, I would love to think he's done as a Red Sox fan, but you know, realistically, he's not done. Before last year, he had eclipsed 200 innings in five of the previous seven full seasons, you know, excluding 2020. But even in 2020, he led the league in innings with 73 or was right up there. So yeah,
and the year he didn't make it in 21 was 181. So it's he's a volume guy.
Damn. Absolutely. I mean, 200 strikeouts and five of the previous, actually all five of his previous full seasons, including that 326 strikeouts and 212 innings. Just ridiculous. Back in 2019, his last year with the Houston Astros. But yeah. Gerrit Cole still got some gas left in the tank. All right, last thing for you, Eno, before we get out of here. I mean, kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier. Kind of wanted to talk, obviously we're talking top 25 guys. I want to see if there's any name. I mean, you mentioned Bryce Miller a little bit earlier. Any name, you know, Miller or elsewise that stands out to you as someone that's not, you know, generally, you know, thought of as a top 25 guy now that you think could jump into that range this year?
Yeah. When I saw the name, I was like, oh, this guy. And then when I saw the name, I was like, this guy, Grayson Rodriguez.
Love it.
Right now with the Stuff Plus revamp, he's got four pitches that are above average, and having an above average fastball while having a large mix is rare. He's figuring out, like, he fell in love with the cutter when he first came up, and that wasn't a good pitch for him. And when after he came back in 2023 and ditched the cutter, he was good. I know there's some injury concerns, but in terms of like having the pieces to put it together and, you know, not necessarily having the surgery yet, and like, you know, being poised to maybe like give us that first 180 inning season with four or five pitches that he can mix with good command. I think that, you know, he's right at the precipice of maybe breaking out. You know, what I found was also that he's 25 right now. And what I found was we just don't create qualified pitchers that are under 25 anymore. And it might be an indictment of like how the minor leagues works now. We just don't, in like AAA, for example, guys are throwing like 50 pitches per start, and like, you know, they're not really coming to the big leagues ready to start. They're coming to the big leagues having been sort of babied. Like, we don't want to hurt them. We want them to advance and make their pitches better and learn how to get through three or four innings. But they're not like, oh, I'm here in the big leagues, I'm ready to go six, you know. And, you know, so I think that that leads to a lot of pitchers coming. And also part of it is like Stuff Plus, we optimize their stuff grades in the minors. And we like tell them, oh, you need to throw this pitch with this much ride and this and this and this. And so they're thinking a lot about like pitching as a piecemeal thing, where they're like, oh, I will be a good pitcher if I throw my fastball with 19 inches of vert, and I throw my cutter with 6 inches of horizontal, and I throw my breaking ball at 85 miles an hour. You know, they're kind of thinking like that, as opposed to, I think it takes a while to kind of be like, oh, I need to get him reaching, and then, oh, speed him up and slow him down and go in and out. And that's, I think Grayson is maybe ready to do that. I think he's right there. You've seen flashes of it.
Yep.
And he has all the pieces. So I really like him this year going into that sort of next level.
Man, I love that pick. I've always been a big Rodriguez guy. I saw him in AA, I want to say that was 2021. I was down visiting friends right outside of Philly. We drove about an hour up to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania to see him start there when he was with the Bowie Bay Sox. And I mean, he was already, you know, either the number one pitching prospect or one of the top few in the game at that point, but it was like it just solidified.
Yeah, how quickly if you forget, he was so dominant, right? He was so good. I saw some stuff numbers from him from the minor leagues, and they were just like all elite, you know. And like,
was so good, yeah. He was. I think he's still the most impressive arm I've seen live in the minor leagues over the last several years. I mean, you know, Ricky Tiedemann's I was right up there, but yeah, Grayson Rodriguez, friggin' love that guy. I have a few shares of him, so I'm really hoping he takes that next step. Chris, any thoughts on Rodriguez or another name you thought could make that jump?
Yeah, I mean, obviously like Rodriguez a lot. Prospect guy, hope that he continues to pan out. But I'm going to take Hunter Brown as somebody I like to take a step
forward.
Oh,
they've got him right next to each other in my ranks. That's the other name I was looking at.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the strides that he made. Like, it's funny how hyped he was early in the year, coming into the year, and then how disappointing it got really quick. But he comes back, and he just had such a strong finish to the year. You look at the stuff improvements down the stretch. I mean, the fastball just got better and better all year, which was great to see. Yeah, I really believe in the combo of the fastball, the slider, solid curve when he throws it. Like, I think it's a good enough arsenal, and the command improvements that we saw as well. Like, yeah, I'm just buying into a Hunter Brown breakout this year.
Yeah, I mean, after that rough start, like, he really turned it around the last, what, 3.5 or so months of the season. I think he was probably like a top 20, top 25-ish arm over that time span. So, yeah, I like that name, too. Another name I'll throw into the hat here, though, I think he might be a little more downside here with him, but I still like Taj Bradley a good bit. I like the stuff. You saw, like, that middle part of the season, he was, I think it was, what, like a month and a half, 6-7 weeks where he was like a top five pitcher in baseball. Then the wheels kind of fell off. I think there's still a lot of volatility there, a lot of inconsistency. He gets hit hard too often. But, I think he ranked very highly on the stuff plus leaderboard, if I recall correctly. So I like, I like him. I like Pepio. I like a lot of the Tampa Bay guys this year. So hopefully they can all stay healthy. But,
I think he brings to mind, like, what I've been sort of talking about with, like, what I think about when I think about long-term pitchers and dynasty and stuff is that I'm just, like, waiting for him to add a pitch, I feel like, he's, like, playing around with pitches and he's got the cutter and he's got the splitter, but, like, why doesn't he have a slider? Like, that's so weird for me. It's a slider league. And if you don't have a slider, that's one of the, I brought it up with Roki Sasaki, it's like kind of weird sometimes when you don't have a slider. I'm like, why not? Like what's missing? So
all the cool kids have sliders, he says.
Yeah, right. If he doesn't have a feel for a slider, then it's going to be like, he's going to be, you can always be Gossman, there's always a route for you, but he doesn't have the Gossman feel for his splitter either. So I'm kind of like, he might just be a dominant fastball, like looking for a secondary pitch. And I love him. So I think that was a good name to bring up. It's just, I think he's missing some of the sort of soft skills that I look for when I'm looking for dynasty. In a redraft situation, I will always draft a guy like Taj Bradley in case he breaks out. But in a dynasty, a lot of times you're trying to bet year to year and long term, and you've just given up like some sort of long-term piece to get them. And Like it's, you have to think more year to year. And I don't know, one of these years I'm going to give up on Taj Bradley.
Yeah. Maybe me too, but that's not gonna be this. It feels like he should be older than he is. So he's still only 23. He'll be 24 near the end of spring training.
High school drafty. Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like he should be like 26, 27 at this point, but maybe because I've been, ranking him a while for in prospect rankings, over the years. But yeah, I still like Taj Bradley.
I like Pepio better because he does have the dominant changeup, but I think he's shown a better breaking ball. And he's kind of a four pitch mix now, Pepio is. And I mean, the natural command isn't great, but I think he's got the bigger mix, and I'll bet on him.
Yeah, he definitely has the stuff to break out, and going from one good pitching dev org to the other with the Dodgers to not Tampa Bay. So yeah, like Pepio, like Bradley, love Grayrod, love Brown. A lot of good names there to wrap up the show, but that will close us out. Eno, it's always a pleasure talking with you. Thanks for coming on. Any passing words here or anything you got going on right now?
No, I'm going to do like a big piece about Stuff Plus because we're revamping it, and that's going to be going on Fangraphs soon. The new version of Stuff Plus is going to be on Fangraphs soon. It's not a huge change, but we made some model changes that make it more predictive, and
So you'll see me tweeting about that, blue skying about that, and I'm gonna do a piece at The Athletic about, you know, the importance of stuff loss across the industry, because now it's being used by scouts, it's being used by pitching coaches, it's being used by R&D analysts, and it's kind of everywhere in the game now. So I had a person just tell me, Kyle Bodie was just telling me he thinks 28 out of 30 teams have their own stuff plus model. So you can guess who the two are.
Yeah, I don't think it's too hard to figure out who those two are that aren't using it. But hold on, maybe they'll hop on board here this year or next. Again, thanks, Eno. Absolute pleasure talking with you. I hope to have you on again soon.
Thanks for having me.
All right. That's it for episode 368. We'll be back again on a couple of days with part two. But until then, everyone take care.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number. Not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.